Hi, everyone. It's me, John Book, and I'm back for another episode of my podcast. Realize it's been a long time, especially considering the promised two-week gap. It's been about 4 or 5 weeks. What can I say except for life got busy? I actually recorded the part that I do by myself a couple of weeks ago, and then just couldn't get the right interview set up for the rest of the show. So tonight I've decided just to record a new introduction and then give you what I recorded 2 weeks ago, so some of it's old information. Like I said, life has been busy. We've had several people in the family sick, basically everyone except me, at different periods, and so I've been busy taking care of sick people. By the way, those of you who are in America, sick here only has one definition. If you say you're sick, that means you have lost fluids. You have vomited or something else. Otherwise, you say you are ill or you're poorly. That's your cultural difference for the day. Anyway, other things have been going on, doing a lot with ATS. And then this last weekend, we had our annual church weekend away, or church retreat, which we actually hold in our building now, called Refresh. It's a really good year this year. Scott and Faith Brennan, two pastors from Scotland, from a little town called Musselburgh outside of Edinburgh, came and did the talks, and they were amazing. Scott spoke Friday night and Saturday morning and just talked a lot about how Jesus knew his own identity, how he dealt with the traps of appetite, approval, and ambition. And then Faith spoke Saturday night and Sunday morning and told a really hilarious story from Ghana. But her theme kind of was how the fruit of the Spirit get worked into our lives. And I love what she said about how, you know, God gives different people different spiritual gifts, but all the fruit of the Spirit are available to everyone. And those are what people need. I mean, we need the gifts, and they're amazing. But people need the fruit of the Spirit more. People's woundings don't come from a lack of gifts. They come from a lack of fruit of the Spirit shown to them. They come because someone didn't show love. Someone didn't show peace. They didn't show patience. And that's the thing people are going to remember. And then she talked about how we develop those through hard relationships and through being in God's waiting room. It was really good. We had some really just sweet times of worship. This year, I was in charge of kind of the comedy bits and emceeing the notices or announcements for the night, and then the open mic time and the fun stuff that we do on Saturday afternoon. So that was good. Today has been a day off, and by off, I mean completely off. I have refused to do any work whatsoever. I'm supposed to go grocery shopping. I put it off till tomorrow. I've just sat at home, and my phrase for the day is, I'm going to live 24/6 in a 24/7 world. So that's me. 2 weeks will be really busy as well. We're looking at planning a trip to the south of England to scout out several cities for possible locations for future church plant. And then we're hoping in January to scout a different country as well, which would be really exciting. And we've been meeting as a church planning team, and it's just an interesting process since our process is a little different. Since God has kind of spoken for us to build a team first and get to really know each other and then find out the place, that requires some patience. Everyone seems up for it and seems encouraged by the process, but there are times when it's a little bit strange because we're not quite sure what we're doing or where we're going. We're excited about it. And we keep, time after time after time again from people who know us, people who don't know us, we've had people come and pray and just say, I just want to submit this thought to you that you're taking a journey one step at a time, and you won't see the next step until you've taken the one step, and it's okay that it's taking a long time, which is great, because we need to hear that over and over again, because that's what's happening. So that's a little bit of life here. Of course, Christmas is coming up, and we're also praying, hoping to get the money to send Ira and Joshua to visit her mom and sister in Moscow. They've never met Joshua, who's almost two. She really, really wants to go see them. Her mom was turned down for a visa to visit us here, so now we're just hoping to be able to work it to do the opposite. And yeah, that's what's happening right now. So up next, the stuff I recorded 2 weeks ago.
What you think I see? I see a band of angels, and they're coming after me.
cause ain't no gray can hold my body down.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to my podcast. My name is John Book, and this is episode 5 of my very own podcast. Got a good show for you today, but first, this is my segment where I talk to you about things that are just on my mind. And this week, we're going to be talking about birthday parties, bureaucracy, and the CIA. Yeah, well, next week, we are also going to be talking about health spas. So, but this week, birthday parties, bureaucracy, the CIA. Now, for the 13 of you that listen regularly to this podcast, I know this is a week or so late. Sorry for that. Life has been busy. We did spend much of last week in London. It was what they call half term here, which is the week break that Nadia gets from school halfway through the autumn semester, the autumn term. And so instead of her just sitting at home all week while I worked, I took a few days off and the family went to London. We stayed with some good friends and lived like Londoners. And just reminded again that though I've never really lived in a big sort of artistic city like London or New York or someplace big and touristy like that, I feel like in some ways I am a city person. I would love to live in a city like that. As long as it had good parks to retreat in, I'd be happy. Is happy as a clam a real saying? Happy as a clam? That almost came out of my mouth. Why are clams happy? Anyway, maybe that's not a real saying. Then we had a good time. Now Nadia's back in school. And right now, we are in birthday party season. It's that time of a child's life where every child that they know has a birthday party and invites every child that they know. So Nadia's getting a lot of birthday party invitations these days. We've got 2 tomorrow, one in the morning at Simply Skate Arena, and then another one in the afternoon, just 5 minutes from the house, which is great. English birthday parties are interesting. There are several features to a common birthday party for a child. It will probably feature some sort of fancy dress where you come dressed as a princess or a pirate or whatnot. Whatnot. I'm 60 all of a sudden. And it will feature the game Pass the Parcel, or as Nadia calls it, Parse the Parcel, where it's sort of like musical chairs with a present. You pass a present around in a circle, and then when the music stops, whoever's holding it gets to open a layer, under which will be revealed some sort of candy or a little game, and every child gets a turn, and then usually sometimes the birthday child will get it last, and there'll be a real present inside. Or the last one's just another piece of candy and some other random child gets it. One thing that's very different about English birthday parties for small children is the cake. Now, if you grew up with American birthday parties, the cake experience would be a profoundly disappointing one for you. Because they bring out the cake with the candles and everyone sings happy birthday, and then the cake is whisked away and you don't see it again for the rest of the party. You depart the party with a gift bag that will include some cheap little, you know, crayons and puzzles and little gifts like that, and it will include a piece of the cake for you to eat at home. But English children do not get to eat their birthday cake at their parties. It's a strange thing. I'm not sure what it says about the culture here. I've been thinking a lot about parenting recently. This is Nadia's first term in school. She's only 4 and a half, but she's now in full-time school. We drop her off at around 8:45 every morning and pick her up at 3:20. It's just interesting because I want to raise my daughter to be a world changer. I want her to be head over heels in love with Jesus, and I want her to not be in love with the world and the ways of the world, and I want her to be different. And I feel like in some ways we're doing everything that we know to do, everything that we've been taught, every parenting seminar we've been to, we've looked at how to apply the things taught there. We're not doing all of it perfectly by any stretch, but we are doing as much of it as we can and trying to get better day by day. There are still days where I feel like in some ways we're losing her a little bit, and I guess that's natural when they go off to school. You know, I've noticed when she plays with her dolls and stuff, they've started using phrases like, well, if you don't do that, you can't come to my party, and being a little bit meaner and having attitudes. And I feel like some of the people that she's linked in with at school, some of the kids that she's drawn to more, are more of the aggressive, meaner ones than some of the nicer kids that we've met. She doesn't talk about them so much, but she talks about these other girls. And it's just, it's interesting to try and figure out how to shape her, even as she's in school at such a young age. I also, at one of the birthday parties she went to, you know, heard some of the boys, oh, he likes you. He likes it. Not to her, but to some of the other girls, and already talking about crushes and all that at 4.5. And I want to teach her differently, that is not what we get involved in at that age. That's not good for her heart. I'm not sure how to teach that. I've heard the phrase that someone in Waco taught their kid. If you say that, my daddy's going to crush your face in. And I tried to teach that to her, but she just looked at me and said, isn't that really mean to say to someone? It's like, yeah, maybe I'm not doing this right. A little bit worried. I don't think in an unhealthy way. It definitely makes me want to pray more and use the time that we do have with her more wisely. It's just hard to see her be more eaten up by the culture that she's surrounded by. I want her to be in love with kingdom culture. And she's not yet. She has her Jesus time every morning, as we say. But a lot of mornings she doesn't want to. She's just not there yet. She's just not that interested yet. She's not that engaged in church and things like that. Really, I know that it's going to pay off if we continue to be faithful to try and raise her the right way. I just really want to see her get excited about it. I feel like she's got the personality of a leader. She's a very strong type A personality. And I want her to not let people sway her to go a certain way, but for her to stand and lead others a certain way. So yeah, that's one thing that's been on my mind. Now let's talk about bureaucracy. I had a funny story that I was trying to relate to someone a few weeks ago, and I thought this is a great story for the podcast. Nobody likes bureaucracy, I don't think. Maybe somebody does, but it is sort of a necessary part of our society. We have to have structures and things in place to get things done. Sometimes we complain about the bureaucracy in our particular country. And I used to live in Uzbekistan for 3 years. And after living there for 3 years, I came away saying, never again will I complain about bureaucracy in the States or anywhere else. Because whereas it might be complicated and you might have to stand in line at the DMV or whatever for a long time, in the States at least, if you know that if you do thing A and turn in form A, that you will get result B. There's bureaucracy, but it works and it makes sense. And that was not always the case in Uzbekistan. Now, it's interesting. We've moved to England now, and in England, well, Ira says that sometimes the bureaucracy here reminds her of Soviet days. There's a lot more of it than there is in the States. It's a lot more complicated and a lot more inefficient, it seems like, in some ways. When Joshua was born, we had to apply for his passport, which we did easily through the American Embassy. And then we had to apply for him to get a visa to be a dependent in our family to stay in the country. So that we could leave the country, because if we left the country without him having a visa in his passport, he wouldn't be able to get back in, whereas the rest of us would. So we applied for it, something like 30 pages of documents, including questions like, had he, my 5-month-old child, ever participated in terrorism? Did he have a criminal record? Did he intend to, take certain kinds of work while he was here? And then it was turned down. And it was turned down because when they tried to enter my debit card details to pay for the visa, it didn't go through correctly. They printed out a sheet of their attempt. They'd only, for some reason, typed in 12 of the 16 numbers, and that's what caused it to fail. But if it fails once, they automatically reject it and send it back, and you have to reapply. So that was kind of discouraging, because it was entirely their fault, as far as we could tell. And then when we eventually did get it approved, and our whole family's visas renewed, there was in Ira's passport, it says that she can work, but she cannot take any, I think it's worded medical or doctor. or hospital type jobs. But in Joshua's, it says that he is allowed all sorts of work. So we have hired my 1.5-year-old out to the hospital. He's doing surgery right now, even. But that's not the story I was going to tell you. The story that I was going to tell you actually took place in Uzbekistan when Ira and I first got married. We needed to apply for her to move to the States with me. And the first step in doing that was to sort of reinforce the fact that we had legitimately gotten married by changing her name in her passport, her Uzbek passport, from her maiden name, which was Smirnova, to her new name, which is Book, B-O-O-K. So this is how it went. Now, in that country, when you're born and when you live in a certain place, you are sort of registered in that neighborhood or in that location, and you are legally supposed to continue living there unless you go through this ridiculously complex and sometimes impossible process to get yourself registered in a different part of the city. And she'd been living in a completely different part of the city for a long time, but basically her paperwork still had her in this neighborhood where her mom lived. So we had to travel. It was about 40, 45 minutes by bus over to that part of the city. We went on a Wednesday and applied, filled out this form at this office, that's sort of the office of her little neighborhood district. And there was this woman that was working there, and she filled out the paperwork, and she noticed that on the paperwork, nowhere was there a place to write the correct spelling of the new name on the form that was going to actually be sent to the passport people. So she said to the lady, "Do you want me to just write it here?" And the lady said, no, we know how to spell. Now, keep in mind, this lady's speaking Russian and Uzbek. The passport is in English and Russian, not in Uzbek. So Ira didn't really trust that, so she made a note in the margin, new last name, B-O-O-K. The lady said, come back 3 weeks from today, and you'll have your new passport. So 3 weeks later, 45 minutes across town on the bus, went to this office, and we got to the office, and they said, that lady doesn't work on Wednesdays, so you'll just have to come back tomorrow. Well, we dropped it off on a Wednesday, so that was curious, but we took the 45-minute bus ride home. Next day, got up, 45 minutes across town, got to the office. Sure enough, the lady's there. Great. We're here to pick up the passport. Oh, I'm sorry, you don't pick it up from me. You pick it up from this police office that's about a block and a half away, but they're closed on Thursdays. Okay, so we go back home. The next morning, Ira decides to go by herself because I'm sort of tired of making the journey, I guess. And so she goes by herself, gets to get there at around 10 a.m. I don't see her until maybe 2. I'm wondering what's happened. She gets back looking incredibly frazzled. So when she got there, here's what happened. They gave her the passport and her new last name, officially and in the government's eyes, Irina Buck, B-U-K, Buck. So that is now her new last name. She protests with the lady who's giving her the passport, saying, "This is not actually my last name." And the lady says, "Well, that's how you would spell it in Uzbek." And she says, "Well, the passport's in Russian and in English, and this is not how you spell it in English, and this is going to be, you know, for the American embassy." And it's like, "No, I'm sorry, this is what we've changed your last name to. This is now your last name." Ira argues with the woman further, and at one point the woman looks at her and says, "I'm sorry, who are you to tell me how to spell your last name?" Apparently, the look of anger and, I don't know, craziness that entered Ira's face at that moment scared the lady. So she said, okay, fine. I can send you up to see my supervisor and you can talk to him. So she gets in with the big man, the boss, and says, "Look, this is not my last name, B-U-K, Buck. That is not who I am." And the man says, "Well, there's nothing I can really do about it. It's already been officially changed. But what we can do is you bring in your husband and we'll change his last name to Buck so that they match." Yep, you heard it correctly. This almost became the Buck Report. So she argued with him further and basically, after much frustration, convinced him to change it. He said, fine. "You'll have to pay again this certain amount of money, and we'll have it for you B-O-O-K like you want, and you can come pick it up tomorrow." So she comes back. Saturday, she goes again, 45 minutes across town. Sure enough, the passport's there. The name is spelled correctly. Everything's ready, except the man, the boss, who has to sign every passport, has forgotten to sign it and he's not in on Saturdays. So Monday, finally, she goes back, picks up the passport, correct name, correct everything, signed, and she is now officially, in the eyes of the Uzbek government, Irina Borisovna Buk. And from that moment, I said, you know, when we get to the States, not complaining about the bureaucracy there, because that was insane. So for our listener question this week, I'm just going to ask you, have you had any bureaucratic nightmare experiences? I know that several of you have lived in other countries. Maybe you have one or two of those to share. And the feedback line is the email address, veryownpodcast@yahoo.com. That's veryownpodcast@yahoo.com. Now, the last thing that I wanted to talk to you about before I got to our interview is a book that I recently read. This is just a book recommendation, a review. Just finished reading a book called Jesus, My Father, the CIA, and Me by Ian Morgan Crone. That's C-R-O-N. This is a memoir of sorts. I think that's actually the next part of the title. A memoir of sorts. About the life of this man, Ian Morgan Crone, who is now, I think he's an Anglican minister of some sort in New England. Or he's in the doctorate program to become an Anglican minister, something like that. And it's about his experiences growing up with a father who was an extreme manic depressive and alcoholic personality, who at times was incredibly abusive, and just the difficulties in growing up under that man when he was a teenager. His father had led a pretty stable life for the first several years of Ian's life. He was known as some sort of high-end, like, Hollywood producer, and they have pictures of his father with all of these different stars, and they would vacation in all these exotic places. And that later, he discovered that later was turned out to be a front for his work with the CIA. And it's about Ian's journey in life, dealing with his father, but also dealing with his relationship with God because of his father. And there are some hilarious stories in this book. There's one story that takes place when he is mistakenly sent to the Catholic Church to help be an altar boy. The nanny, who is partially blind, thinks it's 5 or 6:30 in the morning when he's supposed to get up there, not seeing that it's actually 3:30 in the morning, and sends this 7 or 8-year-old boy to the church by himself at 3 in the morning in a big city. What happens after that is really, really funny. And then there's some really touching parts as well. Later, I think in his college years, he has this revelation of God where he makes peace with God that is just beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful scenes in a memoir that I've ever read. So if you're wanting something that is somewhat inspirational but is also really funny and really touching and just an insight into human life, highly recommend this book.
And there you have it. That's what I recorded a couple weeks ago. And now I'm signing off and hope to have you something new in the next few weeks with an actual interview and an actual game and actual content that you want to listen to. And, as I promised before, health spas. Good night.
I don't want to ride on somebody else's passion. I don't want to find that I'm just dry bones. I want to burn with unquenchable fire. Deep down inside, see it coming alive. I don't want to ride on somebody else's passion. I don't want to find that I'm just dry bones. I want to burn with unquenchable fire. Deep down inside, see it coming alive. Help me find my